Trying to be too funny, as usual.
Oh, you had to try, Jake.
Oh, try to.
Try harder.
Yeah. I'll burst if I tried any hard. Hello, lovely Squawker Talker listeners, and welcome to the latest episode of the Squawker Talker Football Podcast. My name is Jake Entwistle, and we are diving straight in to transfer stories this week. The African Cup of Nations, of course, Riyad Mahrez sending Algeria into the final. That will be played on Friday. But this week, it's all about the big names being linked to the big clubs. And joining me to do exactly that is chief writer at Squawker, Antoine Griezmann's number one fan now, Mohamed Butt. Welcome.
My son's his number one fan, but I'm number like 6, or maybe number 17, as he's wearing on his back.
I was waiting. I was going to say, if you didn't say it, I was going to say,
yeah.
You're not happy with that, are you, in particular?
I mean, well, just because, I mean, let's see what happens, because I still think he'll probably change it in the window once a certain Brazilian has gone to somewhere else.
Somewhere else. So he jumped the gun to secure a shirt number when really he should have waited. And our second guest returning from exploring the world around the world in five days and just to one country, really, as chief editor at Squawker. Will, welcome back.
Good to be back. Thank you.
It's great to have you back. And again, it is just two listeners. Sam Long has departed us on holiday himself.
You said just two listeners.
Yeah. Did I say two listeners? Freudian slip as we got some...
Which is also true.
Yeah. But no, more listeners than that, of course. And I know there's more than two listeners because we have at least two questions for our first section of the podcast. This is the most in-demand topic we were asked about when I asked four questions from the lovelinesses. And this is Harry Maguire to Man United, or maybe still even Manchester City. And the first question is, we'll dive straight into it, of course, the context actually is that reports from pretty much every source have reported that he has asked to leave the training camp to either undergo medicals, discuss a move away. 60 million with 20 million add-ons looks like going to be the price, which wouldn't make him the most expensive defender in terms of base fee. Van Dijk, 75 million is still the bar set for that. But at Austin Reds has said, why is United / Ole Gunnar Solskjaer so interested in Maguire? What do they see in him, except Premier League experience, that they don't in other available centre-backs? How will he fit in? And whom will he partner at the back, considering Bai is perpetually injured? So, incredible question with so many different angles. Right. Mo, I'll let you pick your favourite one and dive into it. I imagine it's the why Maguire.
Why? Because he's absolutely massive. Like, it's... No, look. All right, obviously, Man United have at centre-back a gaggle of average to terrible people. Players. Sorry, not people. They might be perfect enough people. Actually, Marcos Rojo can't make toast, though. So, you know, that's pretty...
Questionable.
That's pretty dodgy. But, look, as footballers, Rojo is occasionally sublime, mostly terrible. You know, Phil Jones is perpetually confused and injured. Smalling is very, very solid and like 6 out of 10 and a really good mid-table centre-back. Could maybe be a very good squad centre-back for Man United. Not a superstar. Bailly has amazing potential, but is raw and has had his confidence shattered by Mourinho and it seems to be injury prone now. Lindelof's very good. Now, here's the problem. None of them are great. Harry Maguire is great. He's absolutely massive. He's fantastic in the air, in defence and attack, which also, so is Chris Smalling, to be fair, but Maguire better than Smalling. I read on Smalling in that regard. He's good on the ground, better than Lindelof in that regard. You know, good, strong in the tackle, good intercepting. He's brilliant coming out with the ball. I don't know if he's better than Lindelof in this regard.
Oh, yeah.
Because Lindelof's an excellent, excellent passer, but Maguire's a dribbler. Oh, sensational. Right.
Yeah.
You know, for a guy that big, he has real control over the ball. He doesn't like just charge out like a raging bull. He actually, he glides out like a king of comedy. You know, it's, that didn't work. But there's Scorsese movies, if anyone wondered what I was doing there. He glides out like a good fella. See, that's what I should have said. Anyway, he glides out like a good fella. He's an excellent, graceful player on the ball. He's a good passer. He's a great all-round centre-back. There are issues with him. He's not necessarily the perfect choice, but to put it bluntly, to answer the question, why do they want him? He's great. He's better, and he's much, much better than everything United have right now.
He's so good, in fact, that of every player, I think 290 players to contest 30 aerial duels last season. He had the highest success rate of 78.1%, beating Virgil van Dijk. So perhaps he should be worth 80 million. And he was the only player in the Premier League to maintain 75% success rate in aerial duels and dribble success. So there are the exact stats to back up the points you're making there, Mo, that he is a defender which is comfortable in the bruising aerial contest that you expect
in the Premier League.
But also, and remember Jose Mourinho lamenting multiple occasions the lack of defenders that could play the ball in that Man United side. How can we build a team that wants to keep possession when none of our defenders can pass the ball?
Literally just Lindelof and that's it. And the rest of them are.
And Harry Maguire and Lindelof, which to answer again the question about who you'll partner, that's most likely going to be the partnership as it stands. You have someone, that, as you said, that is better at passing perhaps than Maguire, but then Maguire will bring it out and actually say, move out the way, midfielders, I'll do your bit.
And that's actually a good mix to have. You don't want two guys who do the same thing. Look at Vertonghen and Alderweireld. Again, Alderweireld is a passer. Vertonghen brings it out with the ball at his feet. And also, again, not to keep crediting Jose Mourinho for things, but he did always say, I want someone that can play on the left, so Lindelof can play on the right, and Lindelof now, if Maguire comes, can find
As we said on a previous podcast, Maguire must play on the left.
Yeah. In terms of the passing, though, I think, and you looked into this earlier, because you were talking, this is off air, and it's a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about how Brendan Rodgers coming in has sort of prepared Harry Maguire maybe for a team like Man City, Pep Guardiola's Man City, who were heavily possession-based. Like, outside the top four, only Arsenal have played more successful passes than Leicester since Rodgers took over. And no defender outside the big six played more than Harry Maguire during that time frame, 535. So under a sort of manager who's more positive in terms of approach, Maguire's shown that he can be the go-to guy in terms of like distribution and the back.
And we saw at the World Cup, I remember, I loved the, again, harking back to, it's more than a year ago now. I think yesterday was the anniversary of France's win. But I loved the composition of England centre-backs in where you had Kyle Walker, who recovered everything. John Stones was the one that was really having seen all the touches. But Maguire was the one bringing it out and still had a lot of touches on the ball. And agree completely there that Brendan Rodgers has, maybe that last 3 or 4 months under Brendan Rodgers, ticked the boxes that the likes of Guardiola and Man United and the even bigger sides, quote unquote, wanted to see. Is could he have 60% possession and still be as effective, or was it just sort of was he just someone that could win headers and go on a run forward, like going on an adventure, almost Lord of the Rings-esque? But I think he proved that he can be calm as well on it. And his long ball passing is still decent. I think you still see some sprays from left to right. As many as Lindelof, but he's got that in his locker.
Yeah, it's not to say that he can't pass. It's just that Lindelof, that is an exceptional pass for the ball. But the one weakness, the one caveat, obviously, yes, I agree that Lindelof will be the one that partners him, because Lindelof is currently United's best centre-back, and then you partner him with Maguire. And, you know, but the one caveat there is, I think the one problem United have, which would be greatly alleviated if Eric Bailly wasn't so, you know, injury-plagued, is Maguire and Lindelof both have the same weakness, and that's pace. Like, they both turn, not like slowly, but not quickly either.
No.
Like they're not quick on the turn. And that, you mentioned Kyle Walker and recovery. I think his presence in that back three was essential to England's stability as a defensive unit, because he got round on the cover, you know, when Stones got caught out. And that's maybe why, when you're looking at England's future centre-backs, maybe it's not going to be Stone in a two. Maybe it's not going to be Stones and Maguire. Maybe it'll be Gomez and Maguire. Or maybe, you know, someone with, who has a bit more.
But to give you credit, Mo, you've already identified the exact solution to that.
Yeah.
Based on someone that Man United have already signed.
Well, yeah, Eric Bailly, but it's just...
Well, Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Oh, I'm teeing you up here.
I was thinking centre-backs. I was like,
I remember everyone else's own opinions more than they did. Wan-Bissaka, I think you've spoken about some sort of asymmetric balance, and we've spoken about Aaron Wan-Bissaka being one of the best defenders. He will have the ability, depending obviously where your attack comes around and which flank you are attacked in, but they now have a defender that can defend and can clean up.
That
and,
is true.
And we've already seen in their season, pre-season friendly against Perth Glory, Man United managed to already find a clip of him recovering and slide tackling someone. It was the most Aaron Wan-Bissaka clip you could have found, and he's done it within his first 45 minutes. So they potentially do have someone now.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
To compensate for those weaknesses, which, if it was Ashley Young at right back, and we've seen it and we saw it for Man United last season. Once their centre backs got beaten,
That was it.
It was. But now they have potentially someone competent on the right side. Luke Shaw, I remember, was criticised heavily. I can't remember which game a goal was scored in which he just let his runner go past him and didn't recover.
Shaw is the one. Yeah. He's not a great defender. He's a very good going forward, very good attacking player. So, I hadn't considered Wan-Bissaka for some reason. I was thinking Pierre at centre-back. You're absolutely right. That's a role he fills out as well.
So there could be, the main point was that it could be balanced.
Yeah.
But moving on to someone that we loosely mentioned there, Toby Alderweireld is, if reports are still believed, and I don't know exactly when the contract runs out or when the release clause has been set in, but a lot of, at the moment, it seems like you can get Toby Alderweireld for £25 million. And the links to Roma have been...
That's
strong.
Classic Monchi, that, isn't it?
Well, he's at Sevilla,
Monchi. I know, but I mean, they've learned. He's imparted his wisdom.
They've sacked him, but taken his best bits. He obviously is the premium long ball passer, and you alluded to that already.
Yeah.
So is that, as you mentioned about the partnership with Lindelof, is that why they perhaps didn't go for Alderweireld? Because everyone in our questions for that is... Koulibaly was mentioned, and I think that's purely because, yes, Maguire is expensive... But he's going to be homegrown, 60 million, so you get more in that 60 million, whereas 90 million for Koulibaly is a big outlay.
And he's also, frankly, probably willing to come to Man United. Koulibaly's like, I'm in the Champions League, mate. What are you offering me? So, there's that as well. You have to consider that too. I agree. Alderweireld for 25 million, you look at it on paper, you think that makes a lot more sense. More proven than Maguire, more experienced. But, here's the thing. We haven't seen him play without Jan Vertonghen or Maurizio Pochettino since 2014. Belgium, obviously, but then Belgium, Jan Vertonghen's right there as well.
And then Vincent Kompany.
So it's like, we all assume he's a leader. Is he? We don't know. He might just be playing with... I mean, he was, for Atletico Madrid, for instance, he was a backup. He wasn't in their first 11 when they won the league. He played well when he played, but again, next to Godin. So you're wondering, is he as much of a leader as we think he is? I mean, who knows? And secondly, he is 30... He is slow. He plays on the same side of the defence as Lindelof, ideally. And him and Lindelof, as you said, their skill sets are too similar. And you've already got... Now, if you hadn't got Lindelof, I would have thought, Alderweireld is a no-brainer. But if you've got Lindelof already, and he's your... Okay, he's our best defender. You have to buy someone that can at least differ from him somewhat. Maguire is bigger, better, stronger, faster.
So potentially, if Bailly was the premium Man United centre-back option, then Alderweireld makes the most sense. And you end up saving a lot of money. But in order to balance the squad they've got, and Solskjaer has been speaking about how excited he is about this project, and he feels like he's starting to see the platform being built.
They need some midfielders, but
he needs Brian Robson, apparently. That's his latest claim. Midfielder, the Longstaff rumours continue.
Well, the most Brian Robson midfielder you signed for Spurs, mate, so...
Yeah. There you go, unlucky. They missed out on Ndombele, of course. Yeah. So we've answered the questions there. The Maguire, Alderweireld, Koulibaly question, I should shout out, was inspired by Keegan Will Blaze, which is a brilliant handle. And if that is your actual name, that is an incredible name. But you never know on Twitter, so I don't want
to... One thing about Maguire to City, the reason I think City haven't gone for him or are hesitant is because I think you mentioned it earlier as well. He plays primarily at his best on the left.
Yeah.
I don't know that you could put him on the right and he'd play as well. And on the left, City have got their main man is Laporte. So I don't think City will necessarily go for him. I don't think they should go for him either. I think they could find someone more suited to what they need. Maybe Alderweireld, frankly.
Pick him up, 25 million. That would be... Money is no object, of course, but that would be the bargain of bargains for Man City. Although Alderweireld strikes me as someone that is looking for that sort of new... Doesn't seem to be needing to go to a Premier League club.
No, I think he'd go anywhere.
He spoke fondly about Ajax after the semi-final, and I don't think that was rumour-based, but Roma would be really cool, and... Who wouldn't want to go to Roma with the kits they've just released?
You get to
have lightning across your chest. So that's enough reason for anyone. But covering that Maguire stuff, I think we're in agreement that it makes some sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
He's one of the better centre-backs, English centre-backs especially.
They're clearly targeting British players. Well,
yeah.
I mean, they're confirmed as having targeted British players, basically.
So Maguire ticks boxes, and that's why... They are going for Maguire, listeners. But if Harry Maguire should leave, that means Leicester themselves need to find a centre-back. And, lo and behold, an English centre-back has been linked. £45 million for Lewis Dunk seems to be the rumour of how they will replace Harry Maguire.
Although recent comments suggest that he's not considering leaving Brighton. James Tarkowski is the other player linked.
English.
There's clearly a theme there.
Yeah. Big bruising English centre-backs. In terms of the aerial duel success rate, Shane Duffy was fourth and Phil Jones was fifth. And Philip Billing, obviously, at centre midfielder was third. So maybe just wait your way down that list, Brendan. But in general, this was the more point about replacing Maguire was bringing us on to sort of a second part. That, again, we don't need a break for this one specifically, as it leads nicely into it. But we're going to be trying to talk about a specific area of the table and what's been happening in the transfer window revolving around them. And because Leicester are involved, and we've mentioned them, they may be looking for a centre-back and they will have money to spend. And we're going to be talking about a few of those clubs that are fighting to break into the top six. Obviously, Man United and Chelsea, Arsenal, and maybe even Spurs, before they showed that they were willing to sign money, looked like they were vulnerable in those positions, despite the points gap. Leicester have already secured Tielemann on a permanent deal, which everyone agrees is a good signing. And I think it was actually cheaper than initially reported. I saw a Sky Sports reporter saying it wasn't actually the 40 million, it was like 37. So 3 million, but they're still finding some bargains there. But are any of those teams, Will, making a real effort to break in the top six from what you've seen so far? And I know we had questions about Everton in general. Yeah. So this is a free hit for you. Choose one of those teams, dive in, and maybe someone's caught your eye in the window.
Yeah, so the primary contenders would be obviously Wolves, who are enduring quite a quiet summer. There's concern among fans over the lack of links to concrete targets, although Nuno has promised a bunch of business will be done in order to prepare them for that Europa League campaign they're hoping to secure through qualifying. Leicester, we've mentioned, are having a highly active summer, though. Spent the second most among all the Premier League clubs, tucked between Aston Villa in first and Manchester City just behind them. Ozu Perez would represent the sort of wing forward option that Brendan Rodgers expressed a desire in signing earlier on during the season, the summer. They, of course, might have to replace Harry Maguire, although the £80 million fee will allow them to do that and pocket some changes that might, I think, be best used sort of signing a replacement for Jamie Vardy before they actually have to replace him. He's only 32, so you'd hope that a couple more seasons left of him, but
yeah, but I mean,
you want to replace him.
He relies on his pace, doesn't he?
You actually have to, exactly.
Once his legs go, he's useless.
Yeah, but someone that has a Red Bull diet is surely going to be going until they're 40.
Which leads us to the last club worth talking about here, which is Everton. The new signing of Fabian Delph starts training with him tomorrow, so that's good midfield depth. He's said to have been brought in for his leadership ability, but you worry if he's Idrissa Gueye replacement. If they sell him to PSG, I'd heavily slash their chances of gate crashing that top six. Kurt Zouma has flown out to Japan with Chelsea for his preseason tour, so Everton are said to be interested in re-signing him. Obviously, that partnership between him and Michael Keane led to some impressive defensive performances towards the end of the season.
And just a shout.
Clean sheet run at home, I think, was against the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea.
Yeah, their final few games, I think.
Manchester United, 4-0, of course.
4-0. And just a shout there to SamG_9, who asked about Zouma. Sorry, I just wanted to make sure that we had seen it, and that was the reason why we had spoken about it.
So, yeah, the hold-up with that is reportedly Frank Lampard's desire to assess his whole squad firsthand. Obviously, with their transfer ban, they need to be careful about who let that go. With Jonjo Kenny having gone to Schalke on loan, signing a new backup right-back becomes one of those necessary purchases. Reece James mentioned, who I know you've got a lot of time for. The really interesting one, though, is the left wing position. The sort of more blue sky links involve Nicolas Pepe, the dream target, who's linked with some much, much bigger clubs than Everton. But there's something funny about all these transfer rumours, because every time there seems to be a breakthrough among the French media, such as the Arsenal bid, and the Leo Chief's comments about Liverpool interest, they're, what follows is a strong denial among the English media, such as the sort of insistence from Liverpool that they've contacted.
I think Leo want that Premier League money.
Yeah, so exactly. So you wonder if this is just shrewd sort of operating on the part of the agent and the club that has sort of manufactured this perception of Pepe as like the most sought after forward this summer. David Neres seemed a good option after Ricardo's comments. Obviously, we've seen him make comments now expressing his commitment to Ajax. I think the big opportunity is in replacing Cenk Toshan if they can find a buyer and sign someone more compatible.
It's the classic Everton. Still looking for a striker. Lukaku's still their top scorer since he scored 25.
Yeah, and the thing about that is, like, if they get this summer transfer window right, they, of all of those clubs that I've just mentioned, have the kindest opening 10 fixtures, over the course of which Man City and Wolves will be their only opponents who finished above them in 2018-19. And like David Moyes once said that you can probably only judge the league table after 10 games, and that's generally regarded as a sort of a commonly held view among football as a sport and the media. And Everton could feasibly be in the Champions League spots by that point, whereas last season they were ninth.
And this is where you have the likes of, obviously, Richarlison in second season.
I mean, and they've secured Andre Gomez, so that's really good for them. They've got the best friend in the world, obviously, Jeremy. So
they don't need to sign Kurzawa on loan, do they, Mo, according to you?
No, they do not. No, I think it's really interesting, Everton. I mean, they're looking for wing depth, which indicates, I mean, they know how valuable Bernard was for them, but it's like he's only one guy. So it's beyond that, you really lose a lot. And then up front, part of me still thinks Richarlison is going to become a number nine, but I don't think he's there yet in terms of delivery.
Well, that's exactly it. Like, if you sign the winger, then you can play him there and you can put Sigurdsson behind.
Yeah.
And you've got all this depth.
Everton look really, as potentially really, really nice. Like you, though, I do worry. If they lose Idrissa Gueye, I mean, look, if you're watching Senegal at the African Cup of Nations, you know how good this guy is. So you don't want to lose him. And if they lose him, they're in trouble. Even if, I mean, Delph is good, but Delph is not Idrissa Gueye. So,
yeah. But he hates to lose, Fabian Delph.
I think that's another common theme in those three clubs we've mentioned as well that's worth highlighting, is that they've all got really cool midfields. Midfield three combinations, like with the Sigurdsson, Andre Gomez and Idrissa Gueye for Everton.
Wolves is
Neves, Moutinho,
Dendonka. Sensational.
Leicester's probably the best.
Leicester's pretty cool as well now, isn't it? Like Maddison, Tielemans.
Ndidi. Who, Ndidi as well, obviously knocked out now of African combinations. But again, slowly entering that bracket of people, when does someone that's under the radar become on everyone's radar? Because
I mean, Man United need a defensive midfielder, and he's right there.
Yeah. But I imagine if they're selling Maguire, to Man United for 60 million, then if they even think about getting another player, then his fee would double. So,
just to circle back to Wolves on this one, actually, in the context of those opening 10 games, which if you look back to last season and see how Watford's streak at the start of it completely coloured the perception of them over the course of that campaign, they obviously tailed off massively once they got themselves into that FA Cup final. But you look back on that season and see it as a strong season, despite the fact that they finished below all the clubs we've just talked about there. And in terms of where Wolves could improve this summer in the transfer window, I think the stat that highlights what will take them to the next level is that last season they won 13 points against the top six teams in the Premier League and only 10 against the bottom. And they actually play four of the big six in their opening 11 games, Man United, Chelsea, City and Arsenal. So they get some big statement results. They could put themselves in good stead. But that highlights what they need to improve on, is they need to develop another tactic for unpicking low block defences beyond Connor Cody pinging long range passes over to Doherty, pings it in, or to Jota or wrong. I think they need a goal scoring midfielder, basically, as Moutinho and Neves are two players who like to keep their distance.
Well, usually that's good for Neves as well,
true.
But I completely know what you mean. Perhaps it's just that one, rather than having Dendonka behind Neves and Moutinho, you then invert it so that there's one in front of them alongside Jota and Jimenez.
They didn't,
and you swap that.
Like a Sigurdsson type, basically. But a lot of clubs in the Premier League could say
I think given how they started last season as well, they were hoping that the curse of Adama Traoré would end and he would discover some of that promising end product and potential goal scoring ability that his dribbling ability suggests he does have. But again, Wolves fans very unhappy with him being an £18 million signing. So perhaps picking up players like that has worn them off diving straight into the summer, because they were quite active early on last season, holding back.
I still don't understand how Adama Traore hasn't become a thing. It just seems crazy to me that he hasn't managed to get it regarding end product, because he's so incredibly talented. But I don't know.
But that's the thing, isn't it? Some players... you can be incredible on the ball and getting into those positions, but if your final ball or your decision making in that final point, then what was the point even dribbling there? Again, when he played for lesser sides, it was so valuable because they couldn't even get up the pitch.
Yeah, it was like, get us up the pitch.
He was a clearance, a human clearance. So it didn't matter what happened at the end of it, because they were unlikely to get there anyway. Whereas now, got put into that Wolves side, counter-attacking team, great, you're going to be on lots of fast breaks. Didn't quite live up to it. Obviously, he's still there. I don't think I've seen him move or even link to a move away. So maybe they find some goals from him. But yeah, the fight for the top six looks interesting. As we mentioned, Leicester midfield is probably better than the top six. Some of the teams in the top six.
Like Manchester United, the concerns over their midfield. Look at the sort of how weak that midfield looked beyond Pogba. If you take Pogba out of it, then it's difficult to find a sort of a top performer from the last, if last season's evidence is anything to go by.
Leicester's midfield smokes United's midfield. It's better than Arsenal's midfield. It was better than Spurs', but Ndombele could be a big redress of balance there. Liverpool is not as good, but Liverpool's midfield have a purpose. We've already discussed this before.
But also on that, actually, sorry to cut you off, but you look at their fullback pairing, Pereira and Chilwell, they've got one of the best fullback pairings in the league as well. Yeah. Well, certainly one of the best outside the top six.
They're actually really good, aren't they? You think about it, you're like, oh my god, Leicester are actually a really, really good team.
I think people almost thought the same last season.
There'll be that clutch of clubs, and this season it happens to be the three we've just spoke about. There'll be that clutch of clubs in the middle who are just going to have lot bundles of optimism coming into.
I suppose
the
one thing Leicester don't have consistently is obviously they've got Vardy. They don't have the Riyad Mahrez, the guy on the wing who can razzle dazzle in the final third and make something happen.
That was what I was going to say. Is Jamie Vardy scores, obviously, under Rodgers.
They
reinvented the funnel Jamie Vardy into the goals tactic, and it worked. He finished on 18 and was the top-scoring English player in the league.
Yeah, he really finished strong, but it's just that bit of hocus-pocus you need in the final third.
As we mentioned in the intro, Mahrez can do that, whether from set pieces or in open play. Is it Gazal, Damari Gray... As you mentioned, Perez might now fill a sort of wing slot, but almost, I could see Perez... In a similar return to how Okazaki functioned behind
and just
Vardy.
While we're all getting excited, you could also say that they've got the best manager outside the big six, and potentially even a better manager than Man United in Brendan Rodgers. Is Solskjaer.
Leave Solskjaer though, man. He's a nice guy.
I'm not just pulling that out. Yeah, base that on his impact since joining. They've created the most chances, Premier League chances, outside the top four post his arrival. Ben Chilwell created 14 of those, which is the most of any defender outside of Liverpool. And no Premier League player scored more goals than Jamie Vardy.
It's easy for us to get, but it's all because of the joke. If Gerrard doesn't fall over, Brendan Rodgers is a Premier League winner. It's easy for you to get.
If Gerrard doesn't fall over and if they don't blow a 3-0 lead at Selhurst Park.
Yeah, but I think one precipitated the other. I think the loss of confidence against Chelsea. I think, so honestly, it was like Rodgers, and that team was great fun to watch. And that team did not have the quality of this current Liverpool side that came 97 points.
Yeah.
So, Rodgers, I agree with you. It makes me feel sad for Solskjaer, but it's true. Rodgers is a sensational.
I'm really
coach.
Not trying to say something sensational, a fire take on that, but I just think it is objectively true.
Too late, because there's going to be as you say that in the post edit, there's going to be some klaxons firing off.
Brendan Rodgers is a brilliant manager, and because he's a bit eccentric, we all forget that, but he really is quite very good at his job.
Celtic, I know he didn't finish the job, but no one had ever won three trebles in a row, and he pretty much built a squad and a system to do that, and Neil Lennon just about got it over the line. So yes, definitely deserves credit. That top six race, again, we have, it's less than a month now of the transfer window. You can imagine Leicester are going to spend some of the Maguire money, maybe if it's even just to get a replacement. Wolves, we are waiting for something to happen. And when you've got someone like George Mendes floating around, you expect one deal. Oh, I know we joked about the João Felix potential. Obviously, that filled around. James Rodriguez still hasn't found his club.
Oh, come on. Come on.
He can't go to Atletico Madrid or
maybe
Napoli.
We linked him to... Well, I didn't link him.
That's what I'm saying.
We suggested.
That's what I'm saying. There's a reason he still hasn't signed for a club. He's waiting for Nuno to give him the call. And then obviously Everton, as we said, balanced two great fullbacks. If they can now find the balance in their front three, which I think they did towards the end of the season, Richarlison on the right as a wide forward, extreme forward, Calvert-Lewin doing all the dirty work, and then Bernard's magic was working well. If they can tweak that, fine tune it, then they'll definitely cause teams problems, and we saw them already cause problems. They battered Man United, they beat Arsenal,
they're very
Everton.
Good in big games,
so it's going to be intriguing. But that'll round up our Premier League transfer analysis for this week. After the break, we'll be moving into a final section and heading over to Europe and talking about buying Munich. So our trip to the continent takes us to the Bundesliga this week, and we're going to be looking at Bayern Munich, as I mentioned before the break. And we're looking at them because they have lost Robbery. Two of the greatest wingers of the modern era, in my opinion, have both left the club at the same time. They have 43 trophies between them at the club. Ribéry played 425 games, scored 124 goals, and won 23 trophies. Iron Robin, the cut-in master, 309 games, 144 goals, and 20 trophies. And both of them have gone. Iron Robin has, in fact, confirmed he's retired from football altogether. And fair play to him, because what a career that is.
Oh, yeah.
When you look, I feel with Iron Robin now, looking back at what he used to do, and just the fact that the cut-in nature of it, people realise how good he was as well. Even when he was at Chelsea, I remember thinking, I wish Arsenal had signed a player like that. One of my favourite players, but there's a chance for new favourites to be born.
Oh, yeah.
Bayern Munich need wingers now. They're obviously undergoing a squad rebuild in general. We've seen them sign Pavard and Lucas Hernandez to be at centre-back or full-back or whatever. They've bought two defenders that can play across the line, World Cup winners. Now they need to do the same in attack. They have Serge Gnabry, who I'm highlighting first because he was the player of the season last season. Arguably, you could have said Lewandowski for another ridiculous goal-scoring team deserved to be mentioned, but Serge Gnabry for what was his first full season in Bayern Munich, which I always used to forget what it was, actually. I think he's quietly one of the most underrated players in Europe right now because he's multifunctional in attack. He can play any role in any system, scores goals, provide assists. And remember, Andy Cole believes that he's one of few players to give Andy Robertson any problems in the Premier League or Champions League. I mentioned that during, obviously, Liverpool went through, so it didn't cause that many problems. But Serge Gnabry, for someone that was let go for 2 million, I think, from Arsenal.
He cost Bayern five, right? Like, it was a very cheap deal.
For how cheap they've got him and what he's developed into, he is now leading the new era of Germany as well, not just Bayern Munich, in the sense that he's playing up front or out wide. Goretzka is a false nine, who is obviously, of course, at Bayern Munich as well. He could be the heir to Thomas Müller. But this is just about the wingers. So with that established, Serge Gnabry, one of their better players and someone likely Kovac will use as their first choice to replace Robin and Ribéry, if he hadn't already done it. We now look at the players that they've been linked to this summer. I'm going to read the names first that I've got down, and then we'll be talking through each one sort of briefly, an overview, and then sort of picking our ideal four wingers for Bayern Munich. First of which everyone will be aware is Leroy Sané. I think Lewandowski has said it would be great if he would play there. Niko Kovac has said that he's a great player, and even Bayern Munich themselves have confirmed that talks are ongoing. Then there is Ousmane Dembele, who's been linked to, is not necessarily as concrete. Kovac has said he is a great player, but that doesn't mean anything necessarily. He was asked about him rather than saying that Bayern Munich were interested. More on that in a bit. Nicolas Pepe, another accented winger, Obviously, you previously mentioned in the podcast, one of the most in-demand forwards due to his incredible season at Lille, and has still not found a new club. Then we have Hakim Ziyech, who Mustafa 248 has said, why is no one sniffing around him?
We don't know.
We don't know.
It's very confusing.
Even Mark Overmars doesn't know.
The fee was supposed to be something like 25 million, which is...
Yeah, which seems so cheap.
Yeah,
Overmars
yeah.
is basically begging Arsenal to sign him. We have no idea, Mustafa. Yeah. We don't know.
Mark Overmars at the training camp in Brambo said, I think Hakim is better than Mesut Ozil. I'd say sell him, Ozil, and you'll get Hakim for half. But they didn't listen to me.
I should say, actually, that 25 million figure comes from a report claiming there was a release clause or something. But,
yeah.
I mean, but I think there's like Ajax policies never to put any of those. And I think, in fact, Van der Sar denied that they put those clauses in his contract. So I don't know where that's come from.
Yeah.
But there is, as you were about to say, I think that...
Mark Overmars promised.
Yeah, gentleman's agreement to sell him.
So I don't think he'll be any more than 30 anyway, because it's sort of like... You scored 21 goals and provided 20 assists in 49 games for us this season. You've been doing it for 3 seasons.
Yeah.
It's time for you to go. Yeah. Everyone else is leaving as well.
Consecutive Player of the Year award, I think, as well, he won.
Oh, I didn't know it was consecutive. Yeah. And what I loved about Mark Overmars, he said as well, his statistics were exceptionally good. And that's what everyone looks at these days. So, which was great.
Yes, we do, Mark. Yeah, how did you know?
And of course I had to bring it up. And I found one that he can use in his dossier of selling Ziyech. He was the only player in the 2018-19 Champions League season with... 20 plus chances created, 20 plus tackles, and 20 plus dribbles completed.
Should have buried Spurs at the end there, though, shouldn't they? Had like two or three chances.
Of course. He's also the most with most bottles per minute or whatever, or some sort of joke there that someone could make. And for context, Sadio Mane was the only player with 15 plus in each. So it's good company to be in. Moving on from Ziyech, though, probably did my little roundup of him there already, but we had to address those Mark Overmars comments. Obviously, Callum Hudson-Odoi is someone still linked to Bayern Munich. January, there was clear and concrete interest. A world record bid was being readied. However, stayed with Chelsea, and now the transfer ban means they'll probably be unlikely to sell him. And someone that came up when I was looking at names mentioned was Dani Olmo. But I think this is purely agent-driven. Obviously, the Zagreb winger who finished top scorer with Spain at the under 21 Euros. Had an impressive Europa League campaign as well, was the only player that didn't play for Chelsea to complete 20 plus take-ons and create 20 plus chances. So all these winger metrics that are my favourite ever ones to look at, every player in this ticks the box. However, I've mentioned those names. They've all been linked to them, varying prices. I think Sané has been mentioned at 80 million euros to 100 million euros, Dembele 90 to 110, and even Nicolas Pepe, I think, is 80 million euros is the bid that's going. So it's a similar price range. Mm. You could argue that some would represent better deals than others. Leroy Sané, remember, since the start of 2017-18, has more assists than any other player in the Premier League, and he doesn't start. And only he and Raheem Sterling have scored 20-plus goals and provided 20-plus assists. He was the first Man City player to win Young Player of the Season in the Premier League, in the Premier League era. And Fabregas is the only player under 23 to provide 15 plus assists in a Premier League season.
Basically, Leroy Sané is the god tier option. If you're Bayern Munich and you can only pick one winger, you know, put out Leroy Sané is your guy. Not only is he, I mean, just rewind the podcast, listen to what Jake just said. Not only is he all of that, he's young and he's German. And he's just awesome. And he's also got that sort of ruthless sort of attitude that I think would fit Bayern Munich perfectly. Like, he doesn't seem too showy of a person, which seems to wind up Bayern brass a lot. Like, you know, the whole thing with, we didn't try to sign Neymar because we were worried about his entourage or whatever. So they shy away from characters. I think Ribery is one of the few exceptions. Because
with his gold stakes.
Because
I mean, say you're talking about Shelby.
Because I mean, he's Ribery, man. You know, you've got to go. But
someone that consistently shaves a 7 into the side of their head until they're 36 years old.
Yeah,
he's definitely a character.
He's definitely a character. So you know, he was their one. But I think Sané fits Bayern perfectly. I think everything, he can play both wings. Although obviously he's come to be better on the left for Pep, under Pep. I mean, he came through on the right at Schalke. So he is like the best option.
So one of the notes I've made is that the reason why Sané, again, is probably this top tier option is because what you've mentioned, but just to give more context, him and Gnabry for Germany, now either flank a striker, which could be, or Gnabry plays up front, sorry, or they flank someone like Leon Goretzka or even Marco Reus. So if you buy Sané, you are now building Germany's future attacking partnership.
And club and country partnerships are exquisite.
They're always linked with Timo Werner as well. Yes. So he could be the striker.
They could just have Germany striker.
And again, we had questions about Kai Havertz, who... It won't move this summer. I think that's confirmed. But someone, because he's only 19, doesn't need to move. But if you then get Kai Havertz and you have Gnabry, when Lewandowski, again, will probably score 30 goals, but when he's moved on, you have the likes of Havertz, Gnabry, Sané as a front three. It's German. It's extremely talented. And the one thing I love the most, again, you mentioned it there, Mo, Sané, brilliant on the left, on his strong side.
Yeah.
Gnabry is so good on the right, which is his strong side. So I feel like Bayern Munich eventually build a relatively unique attacking front line.
And it's orthodox, in right?
Which the, yeah, exactly yeah. that. Leroy Sané allows you to do that.
I think beyond Sané, I think Sané is by far and away, because it's not just on the pitch, off the pitch as well, he fits perfectly. Yeah. I think Ousmane Dembélé is probably the next best. Talent-wise, perhaps better, bigger potential than Sané, more talent than Sané, but obviously not quite as mature, not quite as professional. He had his problems with Barcelona, but a sensational player. Like, genuinely, like, mind-blowingly good, potentially one of the best in the world.
Mm-hmm. Those are the exact things I've written down, by the way.
Two-footed, like, to the extreme. I mean, you've got perfectly balanced, as all things should be. You've got, what is it, 17?
Well, so, in his top-flight league career, 14 goals with his right and left foot, 14 assists with his right and left foot.
I mean, you talk about playing on both sides. Ousmane Dembélé is the king of that, so... he would be fantastic. Of course, he's more unrealistic because it's Barcelona have him. And I think the only way you're going to get Ousmane Dembélé if you're Bayern Munich is if the Neymar rumours turn out to be true and Barcelona need to raise some cash quickly. Ousmane Dembélé for 100 million. Yeah, that's half the Neymar fee there, right?
So again, so that opens up the idea that, yes, Ousmane Dembélé, I think if you were talking about... Sané fits everywhere. Yeah. If you were just purely picking footballing talent, Ousmane Dembélé, who, remember, absolutely tore up the Bundesliga.
Yeah, he'd be the top.
And formed an incredible partnership with Aubameyang. So someone like Lewandowski, who, again, is that striker that just is there to score the goals, would love someone like Ousmane Dembélé, who, as you said, can play in any part of the pitch because he's never closed off onto his weaker foot. Mm-hmm. But you would be thinking that if the Neymar deal does go through, and we mentioned this before and I said about poaching Griezmann, which obviously won't be the case, but Thomas Tuchel, the man that formed that Dembélé and Aubameyang partnership,
he would want...
must be asking Barcelona, if you want Neymar, give me
Dembélé.
Yeah. And imagine Mbappé, and we're talking about front lines for club and country for the future. Get Mbappe and Dembélé in the same team. Yeah.
I mean,
please.
That's what I was saying all the whole World Cup. I was like, get him on. Come on, you can win every game 5-0. And then in the end, they won them all 2-1, which is whatever. But I was like, you can win these 5-0. But anyway.
If you look at all the public comments that have come out from Bayern players regarding Leroy Sané and their desire to have him at Bayern, it does seem like their eggs are in that basket. That's a clear, conscious sort of strategy that the club are undertaking, reminiscent of what Barcelona sometimes do. You know, the old Pepe Reina.
Sometimes, time, always
do. Putting the Barcelona shirt over Fabregas, that's the sort of cornerstone example of that.
Yeah.
So there's a clear strategy underway to get Leroy Sané over. And it's an awkward, and it's sort of, it feels, I might be completely wrong, but this is off the top of my head, it doesn't feel like Man City have ever really been in this position before, or certainly it doesn't feel like they've been in this position and it's resulted in them losing a star player. Like Sergio Aguero in his sort of a couple of years ago seemed to be continuously linked with Real Madrid and moves like that. But all their big players have just stayed there. They've not been forced to sell anyone.
Because they have no financial need to sell. And so they can afford to be just here's a new contract, sit down and be quiet.
I know, but like...
Oh, but they don't do that, though. They don't do the new contract thing necessarily, though.
No.
What I think is the interesting thing about this is Leroy Sané actually a star Man City player?
I mean...
Well, he's clearly a player they do not want to sell.
That's the thing, isn't
that's,
it?
Because that's clear.
It's just because he's so good, and I think Pep loves having this ability to, as you say, like sometimes it'll be Sané and Sterling, sometimes it'll be Sterling and Bernardo, sometimes it'll be Sterling and Sané. You can mix it up. If you take Sané out of that equation, suddenly it's a lot more pressure on your left back, To produce things, which I mean,
but now they've got Angelino, well, who is low key a really smart signing.
Put it this way: if Sané leaves for Bayern, it will be against Man City's wishes.
Yeah,
they will not want to see
that. I just think the idea that keeping hold of it, Sané does never. Always talk about how he doesn't start as often as.
Yeah, you don't want an unhappy player. I think the one thing maybe that is holding this deal up is the fact that basically I think maybe City are looking for a replacement. I think maybe they're looking around saying, okay, could we sign, if we sell him, could we sign someone? Because obviously they'd want to. Riyad Mahrez is very good, but like hasn't settled immediately. And I mean, if he could step into Sané's minutes, as it were, they wouldn't have any problem, but he'd have to be able to guarantee that he could produce as Sané has done.
And that's what I mean. Sané gives them the unique, strong-sided, left-footed thing.
The tactical element as well is unique. But I mean, look, for Bayern Munich, Sané is the go-to option and Dembele. But Dembele is less realistic, I think, because they would need a whole chain of events to unfold. Yeah. I think Sané is definitely plausible. I think it just relies on Man City either finding a replacement or being willing to let him go. Pepe for me looks like an almost perfectly ready-made Robben replacement, like shrimp wrap, take him out of the package. left-footed, players on the right, cuts in field, scores goals. It's like, you know, what do you want? You can't replace Ribery. That's the one thing. That's where Sané would come in, because I think Ribery is a sort of supernatural creator. I mean, the only player who I would ever really put on Ribery's level or in that same sort of style, which went to Real Madrid for 100 million. So it's very hard to replace Ribery in that true sense. So, but someone like Sané, who is an incredible creator and would dovetail brilliantly with Gnabry and Kingsley Coman, who's also there, but I mean, unless he stays fit, because you know he's
my notes about the fact that the wingers they have there obviously are Kingsley Coman, who is only just turned 23. He's still obscenely young and has achieved so much without playing many minutes. Again, just another really talented French winger that they do already have. And the reason the Dembele thing might work is that as I mentioned, they've signed some French World Cup winners.
Yeah.
They have Tolisso. They could build two little bases, and Ribery, obviously, of course, was also French.
I mean,
but they also have Alphonso Davies, who's super young.
I think they might loan him out. I think if they get their two guys, I mean, for me, I think they need to sign Sané for sure. One of the front lines. I think if it was an ideal world, I don't think financially they can do this. If an ideal world, they'd sign two wingers, and they'd have Sané and Pepe, for example, and then Gnabry, and then Kingsley Coman. Because then if Coman's injury prone, so you're covered from that because you've got three other quality options. And if everyone's fit, you could play Gnabry in the middle.
Yeah.
You've got other options. You've got things you can do. And they're going to play so many games anyway. So
I saw suggestions that Davies might be used at left back, at the fullback position.
Bizarre. Yeah. Well, that would be one thing, I guess. But that would be even more strange considering they bought Lucas Hernandez, who could be used as the sort of cover for Alaba if needed. But anyway, if you're playing ultra attacking, look at Kimmich playing right back.
I mean, yeah, look.
He sits pretty much in the opposition half and crosses it. So this is where... So Ziyech is the... Again, I've given a stat for every player. So the Pepe stat that I haven't said, if you didn't see it on Twitter, was the only player in Europe's top five leagues across the whole top five leagues to produce 100 shots, win 100 fouls and complete 100 take-ons. So he's an elite output winger in the league, which resulted in 22 goals, 11 assists. Few penalties in there, but arguably he had one of the standout seasons of last season.
Yeah.
That leaves who we discussed. Hakim Ziyech is the modern winger in the sense that he'll win you a lot of tackles as well.
I suppose as he's so cheap, I think if you look at maybe, let's say, Sané and Ziyech as the two you sign, because Ziyech is we expect to be cheap, like relatively price-wise, and then Sané will be expensive. You can see those being the two that you sign. They are very different as well in the way they play. So you could see those two being the ones that Bayern go for, or Ziyech and Dembele. I think that would be a good pairing for them. And then you have Gnabry and then you have Coman. And you can loan Davies out to get some experience from somewhere in the Bundesliga.
And then finally on Callum Hudson-Odoi, who, of course, Frank Lampard has said he believes he has all the attributes to play and make similar statements on the world scene as Jadon Sancho. Perhaps he needs to play for Bayern Munich to do that, which is a bit tongue-in-cheek. But Jadon Sancho said he should do whatever he feels comfortable doing and said he would be the next one. So just a reminder that Hudson-Odoi, again, if we're talking about versatile, multifunctional, multi-talented forwards, Hudson-Odoi was that in England youth levels.
Suggestions that Chelsea are going to offer him $100,000 a week contract. That's the
situation. I don't think they will sell him now. One, because he's recovering from injury, expected to be around September. So it's medical and that sort of... We actually don't know how well he's going to recover from the Achilles injury anyway. Bayern Munich, I feel like they've identified Sané as their main guy. And then, as you said, Mo, maybe they will just look for this cheaper option. And that's where the likes of Dani Olmo could enter the realms of rumours once again, because a very interesting forward and was great for Spain in the under 21 Euros. Obviously, that squad with Fornals, Ceballos, Fabian Ruiz taking the headlines. Dani Olmo was the top scorer in the end and didn't even start the first game. So Bayern have clearly identified all of those wingers. And the reason I said Bayern Munich is because realistically, they can sign anyone they want. Yeah. If they allow the funds, and I know they mentioned that they would look to avoid spending Hernandez-like figures for every single player. If they need a winger, they are perennial league champions. Looking to challenge in the Champions League again, which the real build is being built for. But they do have the pick of the bunch. And we've mentioned a pretty strong bunch there. So my final question on this section, just to round off, would be, if you were Bayern Munich manager, ideally out of all those players, who would you be playing either side of Lewandowski next season? And who would you have in reserve? Maybe not dream, because obviously everyone would say Sané, Dembélé.
Well, I would say Sané and Gnabry. For me, that's the one. If you have the ideal pairing, Sané and Gnabry, and then Koeman and Ziyech on the bench.
Any
thoughts, Will?
Gnabry and Sané would be the most feasible dream option. But Ziyech and Gnabry seem quite compatible. You could have Ziyech as the sort of wing playmaker and Gnabry as the wing forward.
And considering they've sort of... Well, James Rodriguez was used as... They don't play a number 10. So having the winger that is purely funneled into taking shots or reverse through balls, Ziyech could be an interesting proposition that gives them something different rather than just having four wingers to rotate. But the answer to all their questions could be just sign Kieran Trippier instead.
I don't know what's going on there.
That was just... Kieran Trippier...
Has a wonderful agent.
To be linked to Napoli and Bayern Munich a year after we all fell in love with his set pieces at the World Cup. It's truly phenomenal, really.
Bayern Munich is the weird one because he literally is just a not as good version of Kimmich.
Yeah.
It's like,
and even if they wanted to move Kimmich in midfield, you remove half of Kieran Trippier's skill set because you still keep Kimmich, who's consistently be one of the most prolific creators from a defensive position. Through his corners and his free kicks. So Trippier is there just to stand on the wing.
And cross it to Lewandowski.
Get height. But again, Kimmich does that already. So that was just one rumour we had to bring up that was funny. But the Bayern Munich wingers question, really, if you're as sad as me, sitting down and thinking about the wingers they could sign and how it could all work is seriously fun. And given the success of the sort of Ballon d'Or shortlist we put together last season, we will be putting out a Bayern Munich wingers free-for-all. So make sure you get involved and pick which wingers you feel like they should be replacing the incredible duo of Frank Ribéry and Arjen Robben with. But unfortunately, and we did want to do a few more listeners' questions, but they will have to wait. Mr. Walker Porter, keep replying. We will get to them. But we have to give other fans some airtime too. So that is all we have time for this week. Mo, it leaves me to say thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Will, thank you for coming back.
My pleasure.
And thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.